This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The October night sky. The nice thing about October is you don't have to wait up quite so late before it gets dark. And also you have the opportunity during one evening of seeing the two most beautiful regions of the sky, I think. First of all, after sunset, over in the west you have the constellations of Cygnus, Lyra and Aquila, with their three bright stars, Deneb, Vega and Altair, forming the summer triangle. If you go about a third of the way up from Altair to Vega, there's a dark part of the Milky Way called the Cygnus Rift, and you should be able to spot a little thing called Brocky's Cluster. It's often called the coat hanger. It looks like an upside-down coat hanger. And not far up to the left of that is the star Albireo, the head of the swan, or the base of the cross, the northern cross made up of five of the stars of Cygnus. It's a lovely double star, and with a small telescope you see a beautiful colour contrast, a sort of a gold and a blue. In the south, in the evening, is the great square of Pegasus, the upside-down winged horse. Starting at the top left-hand star of the square, which is called Alpharatz, it's actually Alpha Andromedae. If you go one star to the left, tilt round to the right a bit to the next bright star, then turn sharp right, go one star, and then the same distance again, you'll come across the lovely galaxy in Andromeda, M31. It's even visible to your unaided eye on a really dark, clear night with no moon, but binoculars should show it fairly well. A bit more of a challenge, which needs good binoculars and a really dark transparent night, is to find the third largest galaxy in our local group. It's called M33. If you start at M31, come back through the two stars where you turn sharp right and carry on about the same distance, sweep in that area, and you may see just a little faint patch brighter than the surrounding sky. And then, of course, rising over in the east during the later evening is the constellation of Taurus. That's in fact got the bright planet Jupiter between the horns as October starts. And then later on during the night, Orion rises. Higher up, of course, you've got almost overhead Cassiopeia. And if you drop down, you're running along the Milky Way towards Perseus, you actually find a little bit of a fuzzy spot with your unaided eye. With binoculars or a telescope, you can see it's actually what's called the double cluster, two lovely clusters of stars. Well, what about the planets? Well, we'll start with Jupiter. It's now rising at about 10 p.m. In fact, by about 8 p.m. by the end of October, but often best seen, in fact, I saw it beautifully the other morning, before dawn, about 60 degrees above the horizon in the south. As I said earlier, it's in the constellation of Taurus the Bull, between the two horns as it stands. Now, Jupiter's just starting its retrograde motion, which means it's moving westwards through the heavens, and that carries on for quite a while, in fact, until the middle of February. And so it's actually going to go back closer to the Hyades cluster, where it was a few weeks ago. Over the month, its angular size is increasing from about 43 to 47 arc seconds. So there's lots of detail to see on the surface, and you should pick up to four of the Galilean moons. Well, Saturn passes behind the Sun on the 25th of October, so you can't expect to see it well this month. But during about the first week, it would be seen, in principle, just a few degrees above the west-southwest horizon, about half an hour after sunset. You'll probably need binoculars to spot the magnitude 0.7 planet. But I think perhaps better to wait until it reappears on the other side of the Sun. Now, Mercury. Well, we normally see Mercury best at what is called greatest elongation, when it's furthest away from the Sun in angle. However, this month, although it reaches elongation on the 26th of October in the evening, is actually not really well seen because it's well below the ecliptic, and also the ecliptic has a very shallow angle to the horizon. So it's only about 3 degrees above the horizon, about half an hour or so after sunset. Well, you'll certainly need binoculars to see it, but I'm not convinced it's really worth it. Now, Mars has been around, lingering in the western sky above the horizon for some time now, and that's because he's sort of moving eastwards, counteracting the fact that the sky we see every night at the same time is moving the other way. It starts the month in Libra at about magnitude plus 1.2, and in fact it rather quickly moves into Scorpius. Rather nicely, on October the 10th and the 11th, it passes just 2 degrees below the 13.5 arc second separation double star Beta Scorpii, which is the highest star making up the little fantail at the back of the Scorpion. That's a rather interesting star system. With a small telescope, you'll actually see two stars, but each of those is actually another three stars each, so there are six stars in total. If you've got a good telescope and the seeing is good, you should be able to separate one of those into two more components, which are 3.9 arc seconds across. So that's a quite interesting time to have a look at Mars. Venus rises some hours before the Sun now, and with a magnitude close to minus 4.1, dominates the pre-dawn sky. It's in Leo, and on the third of the month, it gets exceedingly close to Regulus. Now, Regulus is a bright star itself, but Venus is about 150 times brighter. At about 8 a.m. on the 3rd, Venus comes within 8 arc minutes of Regulus. Now, during the previous 2 days, as they get closer, one should be able to see quite a nice color contrast between them. When they're very close, I suspect you won't see two objects. 8 arc minutes apart, theoretically we could see, but with the brightness of Venus, its flare will actually prevent us seeing Regulus. But it's a good thing to look out for. It should be really good. Anyway, the angular size is dropping a bit from about 16 to 13 arc seconds during the month. But as that happens, the percentage that's illuminated increases from 71 to 80%. And so the brightness hardly changes from minus 4.1 to minus 4.0. So nice thing to look for on Venus at the beginning of October. So what about the highlights? Well, I've just mentioned Venus being very close to Regulus on the 3rd. Between the 4th and the 7th of October, you have quite a good chance to spot a comet. It's only 10th magnitude, which isn't easy to find, but it happens to be very close to the globular cluster M5. That is in the constellation of Serpens. And on the 7th, it's no more than about 2 degrees up to the left of M5. So with a small telescope, with a wide-angle eyepiece, you should be able to get both of them in the same field of view. That would be rather nice, a lovely contrast between a very tight globular cluster, much brighter, I have to say, and this rather faint little comet. You might even spot a little tail going out towards the left or the east. So that's worth looking at. I would urge you to have a look at the night sky page on our website. Just put in night sky into Google, should find it. And there, in fact, I've got charts of all of these highlights, and there's a plot showing the path of comet C2011 F1 Linear as it tracks across the sky in Serpens. On the 7th of October, there's a nice occultation of a star by the moon. It's actually rather too early in the morning, to be honest, about 3.45, depending quite where you are in the UK. But it's a 4.6 magnitude star, Chi 2 Orionis, which obviously indicates it's an Orion, and the waning 21-day-old moon, high in the southeast, will actually cover it for a time, and it's about 3.45, it will reappear beyond the dark limb. That's always a nice thing to look for, the star appearing seemingly out of nothing. So if you can get up that early and it's clear, well worth having a look at. We have two meteor showers this month. The first are called the Draconids, the Draconid meteor shower. And that's on the night of the 8th of October. The Earth crosses the orbit of the comet Yakabini-Zinner. If it's clear, and sadly so often we don't have clear nights when these things happen, get a location with a good, low, northwestern horizon as darkness falls. The radiant of the shower is, as the name implies, in the constellation Draco, which is reasonably high up in elevation. Now that's where the meteors will appear to diverge from, but it's usually best to look away from that point, say 45 to 60 degrees away. So I suggest looking up towards Cassiopeia, which is just higher up in the sky above Draco. And happily, the moon at third quarter is only rising in the east, so shouldn't really prove any sort of problem in hiding the fainter meteors. On the 18th of October, Mars is near a thin crescent moon and also above the star Antares, which is the brightest star in Scorpius. About 1 hour after sunset, if it's clear, good low western horizon, you should see it below and to the right of a very thin crescent moon. The three will make a very nice sort of colour grouping. Also, see if you can see what's called Earthshine, the dark part of the moon illuminated by the reflected light from the Earth. Again, I've given you a plot on the night sky page, but when it's a low object in the western sky, I usually have to reduce the brightness of the sky so you can actually see the objects that are there. You may well need binoculars. Now, on October the 21st, we have the second of the two meteor showers. They're called the Orionids, which of course implies the radiant is in the constellation of Orion. It won't be too bad, actually. There is a moon that might possibly hide the fainter trails, but it won't be too bad. The meteors, in fact, from what is called Comet Halley, they are among the fastest and enter the upper atmosphere at about 41 kilometers per second. That's pretty good. Incidentally, meteors can come into the Earth's atmosphere anywhere between naught, theoretically, and about 60 kilometers per second. Any object at the same distance as the Earth from the Sun will be traveling at about 30 kilometers per second. If a meteor comes behind us, so following the Earth, can you see the differential speed is very low? But if we happen to be moving towards the meteor stream, they're coming towards the Earth, then their combined speed is twice around the 30 kilometers per second that the Earth is moving. So they're really quite fast. As I said, the moon setting in the west shouldn't really form too much of a problem. So that's two meteor showers well worth having a look out for. So there we go. It's actually quite an interesting month, and I do hope we have enough clear skies so you can see some of the things I've talked about.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now here's John Field with what you can see in the Southern Hemisphere night sky.
Kia ora and welcome to the October Jobcast, coming to you from Carter Observatory, Wellington, New Zealand. October sees Scorpius and Sagittarius in our western sky after sunset, and by midnight these constellations will begin to set. If you have a clear dark sky, you may see a triangular glow in the west after sunset. This glow causes a zodiacal light and is caused by light reflecting off dust found along the plane of our solar system. This is most easily seen at this time of year, as the Milky Way is at right angles to the ecliptic. The week either side of new moon on the 16th will give you the best chance to observe it. After being visible in our evening sky for the last few months, Saturn and Spica are now low in the west and will soon be lost in our twilight sky. Mars is higher up towards Antares, and the similarity in colour is easily seen. Mars is getting fainter as it moves further away from the Earth. Both Neptune and Uranus are in our evening sky, but due to their faintness, they are challenging targets. We'll have to wait for the rising of Jupiter for a bright planet to be easily seen. Binoculars and small telescopes will reveal Jupiter's four largest moons, which will change position from night to night. Larger telescopes will reveal light and dark bands, along with other features in the planet's atmosphere. The brightest true star in our evening sky is in the southeast. This is Canopus, the second brightest star, which will climb higher into our southern night sky as the evening progresses. Whilst it is low down, the star will twinkle in colour and brightness. This will decrease as it climbs higher. Tamari Canopus is Atutahi, the High Chief of the Heavens. Canopus is only outshone by Sirius, the brightest star visible in our night sky. Sirius rises in the southeast after midnight. We will then have the three brightest stars, Sirius, Canopus and Alpha Centauri, visible along the southern Milky Way. Alpha Centauri is the brightest of the two pointer stars that point towards Crux, the Southern Cross. When seen with the unaided eye, Alpha Centauri appears as a single yellow star with a yellowish hue. In a small telescope, this star can be split as two separate stars, one visibly brighter than the other. One is slightly brighter than our Sun, whilst the other is slightly fainter. Both orbit around each other in a period of about 80 years. Due to it being a binary star, some lists of bright stars do not have Alpha Centauri as the third brightest star, but to the unaided human eye outshines Arcturus, the next brightest star. The Southern Cross, Crux, can be found in the southwestern sky not far from Alpha Centauri after sunset. During the evening it will get progressively lower and it will be closest to the horizon around midnight. From New Zealand, Crux will never set. Travelling along the Milky Way from the pointers and crux, we come to the bright haze in the Milky Way. Called the Carina Nebula, it is a vast star-forming region about 8,000 light-years away. This cloud is brighter and covers four times the area in the sky than the more famous Great Nebula in Orion, yet it's six times further away. A far more challenging nebula for us in the southern hemisphere can be found in the rather sparse section of the northeastern sky. Here we find a group of four stars forming the Great Square of Pegasus. They form the body of a winged horse. Pegasus was the mount used by the hero Perseus to save Andromeda from a sea monster called Cetus. For lucky more northerly southern hemisphere observers, the great galaxy Andromeda can be spotted rising around midnight. Here in Wellington you need a dark sky and a clear northern horizon to spot this galaxy. I could observe this galaxy from my suburban backyard until a neighbour's tree grew too high. In binoculars it appears a haze slightly brighter than the background sky. Due to its large size, wide-field telescopes are needed to observe this galaxy. This galaxy is estimated to contain 1 trillion stars, over twice the number estimated in our galaxy. Although it may contain more stars, recent studies reveal that our galaxy has more mass, with a much larger composition of dark matter than the Andromeda galaxy. Andromeda was a key player in solving the great debate of April 1920 as to whether our galaxy was the entire universe, and were these spiral nebulae used stars in the process of forming, or were they actually galaxies separate from us and each other? Neither theory could be confirmed until more conclusive evidence was forthcoming. This evidence was supplied by the observation of Cepheid variable stars by Edwin Hubble that revealed the Andromeda galaxy was in fact over a million light years away. This proved that our galaxy was just one of many other island universes in a much larger universe. In 1989, the first potential extrasolar planet was discovered in Pegasus, but due to its uncertainties, it was not until 2011 that it was confirmed as a planet and not a brown dwarf, by which time many others have been discovered, and the current total has risen to 834. Additionally, the Kepler spacecraft has now discovered over 2,000 planetary candidates. I wonder what that number will be in October 2013. Next month offers us the rare opportunity to observe a solar eclipse from New Zealand and Australia. For Northern Australia, a total eclipse will be seen. Observers on either side of this path will see a partial eclipse. We wish all our listeners clear skies from the team here at Carter Observatory.